Accession number 18004, reel 3.
George Rason, reel 3. Did you feel any hatred towards the enemy?
Well, yes and no, if you know what I mean. They were soldiers fighting for their countries, and we were. But, you know, I didn't go a lot on their SS men. We met them once, and we whacked them.
In Normandy?
No, that was in Germany, that was.
We'll mention that later.
It's a long way to go yet. We ain't got to France yet.
Did you have anything to do with the civilians in Normandy?
No. No. Only time we got to deal with civilians was after the war. We went back in once or twice. No, we never see it because they all moved out, you see. They just ran off. And out we took the place, they come back again. But when we went to Belgium, we only fought one place in Belgium. Oh, I shall tell you this and all. Are you on a go?
Yes, right.
Oh. Where did we get to when we got to...
Well, I'll tell you about this incident, whilst you remember.
Well, we was in Belgium, and we attacked them more or less the last two, a little town. I can't remember the name. I was on the Escort Canal. And there was the other side of the canal was Holland. And that was the same time as Arnhem. And we rear company there again, and we got dug in along a road, and in front of us were just plain fields, you know, and behind us was four and gate bungalows in twos, you know, and we was dug in there, and after a while a woman come across the road and asked if we wanted a coffee, or tried to, we guessed what she wanted. And she must have been 7 or 8 months gone in the family way, you know. Jerry sent some shells over. They landed just in front of us and caught the end of the road, because we pulled her down in the trench with us, you see. Yes. And she was all right, in a way, you know. We got her down there. She was, well, I say safe, but near enough. Afterwards, she wanted to go out, and we kept her there for a little bit because she shelled us again. And that got quiet again. The thing was, me and my mate got out, and she couldn't get out, could she? She was too big. So what I done was, I got down in the hole again, got on my hands and knees, and my mate pulled her onto my back and pulled her out from there. That was the only way out. We went across the road with her and up in the bungalow. And she was laughing and telling her neighbour all about this. I didn't know what the hell they'd say. Getting great fun out of us.
Was she shocked, or was she taking it?
Well, she was shocked in that trench, and she was when she first got out. But once she got in her out, she was all right. And I often wonder what happened to that woman. Because we did go there 2 or 3 years ago to that place. And I asked about, you know, but nobody knew anything, if you know what I mean. To try and find out what she had and how and all this, that and other, but...
Now, can we go back to Normandy, because...
Yeah,
you said there was this frightening night attack.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
What happened after this?
Well, we put an attack the same day. There were some tanks, and we was rear company there, and they took that ridge in front of us without a lot of bother. And there we dug in there for a while. Stayed a day or two, then we moved on. We marched quite a long way. We finished up at night behind the paratroopers and the Royal Marines. They've got a piece, right, so they've guarded that bit of coast and some miles inland. We laid up there behind them at night, and that's the first time I ever heard Germans got a one of these radio vans was getting some stick, you know. If you come out with us, we'll see you're well treated and all the bullshit that you're going. And then they got shelled badly. I stopped that. And next morning we moved off to or Sanville, Banneville, and another Trouville, I think, I named the place. And in front of us, there must have been 700 bombers come over, and they bombed them places. So we went in. That was nearly all, well, it was a mass of bomb holes. Places were smashed up. And we just went in there and dug in, sort of thing. Yeah. Oh, and that was there where we had near escape there as well. When we was waiting to see where we'd got to go, I was in some gardens with some ruined houses. And I could see my sergeant was in charge, and I was platoon sergeant to him, if you know what I mean. And ahead of us was all these bomb holes, and I could see my bloke there and that bomb hole, and I kept shouting across to him, there was so much banging going on, I couldn't hear. He was shouting back, and he kept telling me, anyhow, I'll go walking across to him. Oh, like a fire at. I ran like I'm going down it all with him. He said, I was trying to tell you not to come. So, anyhow, we didn't go down, you see, we both sat there. And there was three or four tanks come around the corner. And before we knew where they were, they hit each of them. It was apparently 88 on a tank there, further back, dug in, with just his turret showing. We couldn't see him, but he knocked them tanks out. And they all run off, the blokes did, and... And eventually one of our blokes from the mortar town come across with his wireless or something. We kept trying to tell him not to go back. He said, what's the matter? And we got him gunned down and we told him, there's nobody up there. Anyhow, we said, well, we ain't coming back, will you? And he went mounding back and he got with about 3 or 4 yards and caught. He got brassed up and I never hit him, oh. He saw what we meant then. But eventually we did get out. And, of course, I'll tell you what I've got out, I think, because we see him goodbye at the back. When we looked around, we saw one of our tanks with 17-pounder on. Well, 17-pounder. Well, there was a match for the 88s. And I think somebody further afield showing where this tank was, and I think it got knocked out.
Where was this fighting?
Banneville. Banneville's the name of the place. There's a great big English cemetery there as well. Yeah. There is some marvellous cemeteries about out there. Some are big, some are small, and they're extremely well looked after. Was one day I saw an Englishman with some men in one of the cemeteries, and I asked him. He said, I'm in charge of 5 cemeteries. He worked for the War Office, like. He can speak French. He married a French woman. He lives out there. And he's got 4 or 5 Frenchmen work with him, they got a van, they go from cemetery to cemetery. He said, got 5 cemeteries to look after, and they do look after them well, believe me. Grass is all cut short and little rose bushes between each grave, and each grave got the badge of the regiment on and everything else. Some was 1 or 2 unknown soldiers, in fact, they blow it a bit, sort of thing. And up in one corner is a few German graves. And in 1 or 2 places in Ireland, in the graveyards there, you'll see a group of about 5 graves all touching one another, you know. Unknown airmen. Because I said to the bloke who was in charge of them, he could speak English quite well. I said, what's the reason for this? He said, well, what happened was, he said, they're all bomber crews. He said, and they've been bombing Germany, they come back as it. And they got as far as they can in friendly territory before they crashed. And he said, naturally enough, he said, they caught fire and we pick up the remains and we couldn't tell. We could tell where the bomber come from. They found out where the bomber come from, what it was, and the names of the crew. But they couldn't pick out each individual man because he'd been so badly burnt and this, that, and other.
Now, coming back to your own story in Normandy, what happened to you after Banneville?
Banneville, I know where we go from Banneville. Fleurs.
I think it was Fleurs next. Can you remember that?
Yeah, I can just. We didn't do nothing there much, did we? Oh, we went on patrol. Oh, yes, that patrol. what happened was, one day we was on a crossroads. We was more or less in front of the battalion, dug in around the crossroads. I can't tell the name of the place. But anyhow, our water cart come up with the water, overshot, and went down the road for a couple of miles till he ran into the old village and some Germans. He turned around and come back about 90 miles an hour. And that resulted in me going on patrol. Just to see what he saw, if you see what I mean. And the company commander called me and he said, "I want you to go down the road," he said. "We've got a Bren gun carrier coming," he said, "with a wireless on board." He said, "He'll be up here in a minute." He said, "Meet the sergeant in the semi." He said, "You take six men, go in front." He said, "And that carrier, come slowly behind you, report your progress." I said, "Of course, almost handy." Anyhow, broad daylight too, lovely day. Went down the road. I mean, only about half a mile, or less than that even. And a tall fence, and there was a house on that side of the road, and it was set back a bit. You didn't see it till you got on top of it. And the bloke behind me said, "They call me Ray." And he said, "Ray, is somebody in there?" So I said, "You get that side, then I'll get this side." And the other blokes were there, and my brain gun over the other side of the road got down. And I shouted out, "Deutschland Soldaten, comes here, end of hoc." And here come five Germans. I don't know who's going to frighten them or me. Anyhow, chuck the steel helmets away, because apparently they used to make habit of putting a bunch of grenades underneath their helmets, you know, in case they got caught. Chuck them away. My man would get in the middle of the road. Meantime, the carrier bloke with wireless back, and I sent one my men back with him. I deliberately picked on him because he ran off. Sent him back with him. And we got started up again. Off we went along. So we'd been along somewhere. We heard a motorbike behind us, and that was our company commander come along on a motorbike, which he captured the day before. He said, "Well done," he said. He said, "Carry on as fast as you can." I thought, "That's handy." And he went back. And anyhow, I kept going, and there was a great big steep hill. God, and there was a village at the bottom. I said, "Well, they can see us coming a mile away, yeah?" And yeah, very gingerly we went down the road. All the rest are foreign. Got down the road. Turned left. No houses on that side. A lot of bungalows and houses that side. A little way, a bloke say, "Ray, what's the matter?" He say, "Look behind you." When I stopped and looked behind, there's our carrier right up close to us. There was three of our armoured cars, great big ones, and three Yankee ones. So I got in the road and banged them on, they wouldn't come. So they weren't like in the middle of the road, in the middle of the village, which went round like that sort of thing. I was going round here, another road went up there. As American patrolman, we come face to face. Why I didn't shoot that bloke, I don't know. So he said, "Say, God, I'm glad to see you." I said, "Yeah, I'm glad to see you at all." And he stood there talking. Of course, when these armoured cars see us, and off they went, they passed us and off they went. Then they had a message from the battalion sort of thing. "I'd got to stop there. And there'd be some more come up. I thought they were going to relieve us." Instead of that, about half a dozen our carriers come out with a six-counter gun behind, and we all had to get in, and we went from village to village, village to village. And we never met an opposition at all. They said, "We land up a fancy in Fleurs." Sure. Oh, dear. I missed a dinner over that and all that patrol. If you missed a meal, mate, you never got one. And get hungry after a while. But we used to save our hard biscuits, save the handy things to tackle now and again. And you got nothing. Oh dear.
And then after Fleurs?
Fleurs. Holland. Well, we went to Belgium first. I'll tell you where we went, Dave, after me. We went, since that finished up with a flash gap, if you see what I mean. And by then, we've gone alongside the Yanks, and we never took much part. I never smelt anything so awful in all my life. I was on the advance party, one officer, usually our second in command, the sergeant, and each platoon, and the driver, and the jeep, and some grub. And off we used to go in the advance of battalion, you see. And, went through for less, everything was down. There was tanks, every English and many German, dead everywhere. There's great big batches of dead horses. Apparently a lot of the German terror was drawn by horses. You get big heaps and they'd all been blown up and full of maggots and caught the smell. Anyhow, we landed up in France over the other side of the River Seine at a place called Les Angeles. And we went through Les Angeles to a little village, and there we stopped. And we stayed a day, I think, oh, you're not too far, the battalion come up. And spread ourselves round. And we was there quite a long while. We was there when the fall of Paris, anyhow, because we expected to go there. We wanted to go there, if you know what I mean. But I think Americans went there, and some French, Free French. And from there we went to Belgium. That one place where I said.
The Escaut Canal.
Yeah, over the Escaut Canal. And we said about a day or two, then we went over the canal, about 6 or 8 miles in a place called Wert. They pronounce it Wert, that's W-W-R-T. And we had no officers at all. But then I got an officer. He's going to win the war on his own, he was.
Who was he?
His name was Holt. Got to know he was young, because I remember the company commander bringing him to me, you see. And he said, because I'd been in charge of a turn in about a month. And he came, he said, I brought you off there. And he introduced me to him. He said, look, he's only young. He said, look after him. I said, look, I've got 35 men to look after here besides him. I said, he's going to pull rank on me. And he tried to and all. Got a warm reception, I'll tell you. I would have put up with that. Anyhow, we went to wait. I said, we're no opposition at all. And we stopped one night. That's a long straight road in and a long straight canal, quite a big one too. And there was a big main bridge about halfway, which ran each way. Another two bridges. They was all down in the canal. Germans had blown them the night before. And we went past the third one and we stopped in a school. Next morning, we was ordered to go across the canal. We clambered across this broken bridge. God, I got across where I get my feet wet, tell you the truth. We went down the road a little way and turned left, and we dug in along there. We left one section on the bridge, and the rest of us dug in along. And on the other side of the road, before we turned left, there was a monastery. And apparently, they'd got 8 British airmen in there. The Dutch had. Oh, when we were, nothing, I must tell you this. If we was marching up that straight road in that canal, on the far bank where we got the third bridge, there's all group of these monks, brown abbots, they call them, like dressing gown things, bald heads, and they sang our national anthem and their own. And I thought that was wonderful. I really did. Then I felt safe as a rabbit, you know what I mean? And two or three of them jumped across, jumped in the canal and swam across. I know one come up to me and he soaked through and he soaked me through and all. Wrapped his arms around me, hugged me and this, that and other. I thought that was a wonderful effort. And then when we never had nothing much doing there, I got some photos of that place. Was on there about 4 or 5 days, but I think that's the second night we was, second night we was there. I used to take half the night and the officer the other half. He's a crafty bugger, he was. The horse used to land up at the second half of the night from about 2 o'clock in the morning onwards, or 1 o'clock in the morning onwards. And I was in this trench with this bloke. Two or three used to be, you know, awake all night long, taking turns. And a little air battle went on above us. You couldn't see, it was one of them moonlight nights with plenty of cloud. And though we didn't see, you could tell the way they was going, the bomb was going from cloud to cloud, and this fighter was firing at them all the while. And suddenly there was a big bang. Nothing happened for a minute or two. Then I saw in front on us a leaf, like a fallen leaf. That was a wing on fire. I thought, that's a bomber, one of the bomber wings. And it's coming down like a seer. And a silhouette of two blokes in parachutes behind it. You see? So I said, a couple of them got out. So I went to told the other sections further up. And went round the corner to the little section on the bridge, the lookout. And I see two blokes come along the road. So I hold them. Men come to me one by one. One was the agent, the other one was the CO. Oh dear. I told him what I saw. Before he went to Freddie Grant to me, he said, you should have somebody with you. Well, he was quite right, he was, really. There should have been two on us. And, you know, where conditions were. Anyhow, I told him what I saw, and he ridiculed me. I never saw anything, so, you know, I thought, well. Off they went into the monastery. I went, and I told the section on the bridge, and I went across and told my company commander. He was other side the canal in the Simeon house. I told him, and, you know, he said I'd done the right thing. I went back. Next day, the runner come across. He said, company commander, I want to see you. I went across to see him. He said, you know what you told me last night, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, it was perfectly true, he said. The Undergrove movement brought two sergeants in. He said, they got 7 miles away, apparently, and they smuggled them through. He said, and one of them got a badly injured ankle. So I was right, and apparently the CO had to, you know, sent a message for it to tell me that I was right, so one thing I handed out to him. I knew what I saw. And there was another sequel to that later on. We went over there a few years afterwards. And a very tall, smart fella came up to me and said, you suffered risen? I said, yeah, heck, suffered risen. He said, you captured this place, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, I had a bomber shot down over, he said. I should have been the pilot, he said, but that was my night off, and we had another bloke. He said, I said, yeah, two men had got away. Yeah, he said, I know. And I told him everything. He said, what a coincidence. Huh? And I told him where they was buried, because we'd just been to the cemetery. They was buried down the cemetery. I was in the civilian cemetery. They was buried as well.
But you saw the two survivors, did you?
I didn't see them. No, I didn't see the survivors. They took them to town as girls, you see. I think I saw them coming down. I reported it, I think. But...
And Weert is in the Netherlands?
Yeah, sure it is, yeah. That's a fair-sized place, nice place. Been back there twice or three times. And they really love us. Got a memorial up and a street, Suffolk Wig. You know, that's, and they entertain us and they give us a good old feed and everything else. And they hate the Germans even today. The Lord of Dutch too, you know.
And which month was Weert captured, do you think?
St. Thomas Arnhem, I think it was about the 20th of September. Or around the area. That'd still be 40, wouldn't it? No. 44.
And after Weert, what happened to you then?
After Weert,
Overlone?
Oh, Overlone. I thought it was bad enough on D-Day. One of the worst days I had in my life, it was. Why I'm here today, I don't know. God, Lord. Everything started off all right. We had a tremendous barrage. You know, guns helping us, you sort of thing, firing in front of us. As one of them times when you sort of went ahead for about 100 yards and stopped for a minute while they lathered the place, and we moved up another 100. And we got some Guards armoured tanks with us. It was an independent brigade of tanks, I think. And we got along quite well until suddenly we come to a bit of a bottleneck. There's a big windmill and some houses. And the tanks went down in front and turned them in. As they went around the corner, three of them got hit. As they stopped, and we had one remaining tank, and I followed that with my section. Went down the semi across the road and got halfway across the field, and they got hit. And didn't know what to do. And my mate Joe come up for something or other, and as they got hit, they caught fire. And a bloke got out the turret, one out the front, and we see another bloke come out the turret with his semi, and just his head and shoulders, and he was on fire like. And me and Joe got up on the tank, and the other man in the front got out, and he came out and he put his arms underneath this fellow and lifted him out with one clean sweep, laid him on the tank, and we got him down the three on us. And he got his trousers burnt off up right up to the crotch. Other ones partly jacked. Of course, we put it down, getting handfuls of dirt and rubbing on his bad dress. All his hair had gone, his eyelashes had gone. His face was a bit red. And yeah, we carried him down to the ditch at the end of this field. And some of his tank men, when they took him off us. And for this day, we never knew what happened to that man. Often wondered whether he was still alive. I should say he was, but why I reckon he couldn't get out the turret was he'd been hit in both feet. Because when we laid him down, his feet seemed all wrong. You know, they weren't at the angle they should have been, if you know what I mean. But I should say he survived. I don't think he was burnt round the face, but not too badly, but he was burnt round his leg, that one leg as it was. But I reckon, as far as burns concerned, he got away with it. What happened to his feet, I don't know. They might have been a Roy Campbell then, but...
So, the tanks were supporting you in attacking Overland?
Yes, well, we lost four there quite quick, and there was two more, and I could see them. They was in a garden with a tall fence. I could see them, and I tried to get forward, and there's a machine gun over our left, and every time I had to go at me, I had to go at me. And there's somebody over the side of a great big fence in front, all covered all over with hawthorn. And there was something over there, kept helping us. Something with a heavy machine gun on, and a gun. And I thought, well, so that could be an armoured car. You couldn't see it, you see. So anyhow, after a while, I couldn't get forward. I ran back past the tank into the ditch, ran towards us here. I hammered on the tank, and when I climbed up on the tank at the top, because he got his lid down. And so I don't know if it was an officer or a sergeant. I think it was an officer. Lifted the lid up. He said, yeah. I said, can you help me? Because being up, you could see all my section lying there, and this, that, and other. You could even see that machine.